Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and as many of you know, the Urbanite magazine is our print partner, and we take many of the stories they have every month, and we turn them into conversations on the air and into audio stories and documentaries. I do the question and answer in the beginning of each month's issue. This month's issue is about education and learning, and I want to remind you, as on the way to talk to Michael Corbin, who teaches in our prisons. Before that, he was a public school teacher here in Baltimore. He wrote the article, Learning the Hard Way, in this month's issue. We're going to talk about his experiences teaching in a prison. Remind you, the Urbanite Radio stories on the Mark Steiner Show are made possible by Marin Alsop and the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, presenting its 2009-2010 season, featuring Kathleen Battle, Andre Watts, Yitzhak Perlman, and more. Tickets to the Meyerhof are available at 410-783-8000. Or go to bsomusic.org. And Michael Corbin, welcome. Good to have you in the studio with us.
Thanks for having me.
A return. You were here a bunch of years back talking about school testing when you were a public school teacher.
Another education issue.
One of the things that struck me about the story that you wrote is the fact that you were a public school teacher, decided to go to prison, to teach in prison. We'll talk about why in a minute. But it seems that one of the most poignant experiences for you in the joint teaching is the fact that you see so many of your students from public school who are now in prison, or see people who are their uncles or their fathers or their brothers or whatever. And that's a very frightening and powerful thing here. Talk a bit about that.
Yeah, and it probably was the original impulse to write about my experience, literally to see a former student that I taught in prison, and then to see another, and then another. And then the students that I do teach, I could say, where'd you go to school? You know, Lake Clifton, Northwestern, Walbrook. And I would know some of their teachers. I would know their experiences. And yet we're in prison together. And, you know, it became a very emotional thing. Like, what is this? What's going on here? And so I, you know, reflect on it. And if it's personal for me in that I had these personal relationships with some of those students, but then you see the kind of tragic failure of something going on in our society where these young men are filling up the prison. And it just I needed to give some kind of voice to that.
Now, I mean, and you talk about this one young man that you when you saw him walk in the room, you knew him.
Yes.
And you remembered him as a skinny young adolescent kid, as you write. But here he was this young, well-muscled, multi-tattooed young guy who's coming in there for a year.
Yes.
And that shook you more than the others for some reason.
Well, it was personal. I mean, it was that personal dimension to it. Teaching requires... I guess you don't have to do it as a teacher, but I think successful teaching requires a kind of really personal involvement. And also, I think teaching, particularly in urban public schools, you know the kind of odds that you're up against. And to develop a relationship with someone where your whole mission is to keep from happening what did happen in some sense.
Mm-hmm.
Then to experience that, and also teaching in prison, my mission in part is to say, hey, well, these still don't have to be the same paths that you walk. In the article I said it made me sick. You know, it makes me sick on that personal level for that young man. But it also is a kind of visceral feeling that there's something fundamentally wrong in our country. It's fundamentally wrong in our city. That's producing this reality. I mean, it's so easy to pass it off as some kind of he made the wrong choice, sort of individual narratives of failure, success, whatever. But the scale of it is just too massive for it to just be that. When everybody in my class is straight out of Baltimore City Public Schools, what is that saying? Is it that they're all bad? And, you know, on the larger scale, you know, we incarcerate more than any other country in the world. There's a handful of white guys over at MTC, and unless you want to hold some really regressive notions about race and incarceration and criminality, you have to say, wait a minute, there's a huge failure here.
We're talking right now with Michael Corbin, who teaches in the prison here in Baltimore City. He wrote an article called Learning the Hard Way in this month's issue of Urbanite magazine. This is one of our Urbanite radio story series. You can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at SteinerShow at gmail.com. Jump on to the Mark Steiner Show page on Facebook and join the conversation there. But 410-319-8888. So why did you make that leap? Why did you make the leap? It's not in the article, so I'm curious. Why did you make the leap from teaching public school to teaching in prison, which is such a very different place? And in some ways, you're even more confined in what you can teach in prison because you're doing GED for the most part during the day, right?
Well, I don't know. I challenge some of those assumptions a little bit.
Please do. Come on.
That in some ways, education in urban public schools has become a highly institutionalized rote exercise. And there are so many good things that go on in urban public education and some great teachers. But institutionally speaking, it's become a kind of it's become a much more bleaker place for teachers, in my opinion. And making the transition to prison, there's different ways to answer your question why I did it, and I guess the best way to answer would be because I want to live in a world where somebody doesn't have to ask me that question because, you know, we are a brother's keeper. You know, that it's what we do. That's what we should do.
I mean, when you work in a prison, one of the things you happens, at least I think it happens to a lot of people who work in prisons, that they are there because they really care about the people they're working with in the prison, is you walk in, this door slams behind you. I mean, you know you're in a jail. And then,
well, the door slams after you get searched and remove articles of clothing, but to get in to go teach, yeah.
Right. And then leaving, the door slams behind you, but you're also leaving behind guys that you care about, many of whom you think maybe shouldn't be inside.
Correct. And, you know, on that point, let me give a shout out to all the brothers listening in the dormitory at MTC tonight. Sure. For the national figures, and I think it's true for MTC, about 2/3 are nonviolent drug offenders. I teach an afternoon class where nobody is over 25, and a couple guys are 18, 19 years old. They're hugely talented. They were petty drug dealers involved in the life, in the game. And they're incarcerated, some of them, for a number of years. And it's not clear that their life chances it is clear that their life chances will be severely inhibited because of this experience. And because of the experiences before the prison. Don't get me wrong. It's not that you absolve anybody of their previous acts, decisions. But the question is, is the institution itself providing something else for them? Or is that the mission? In America today, it's not the mission of the prison to do that. It is hard to go into prison and teach, to come back around to your question. It's difficult for me every day to go in there and see what's nothing less than a kind of human warehousing, the waste of human potential that's there. It gets very emotional and psychically exhausting, yes.
You teach both this daytime program that is voluntary for men to come into or not, which is largely for GED, right?
Correct.
And you teach in the evenings college courses.
Well, that's temporarily no longer existing. I pushed to attempt to have a college program. There's a number of men in prison with high school diplomas that get nothing else. I mean, there really is no post-secondary option. There are some people that support it. I mean, really, college programs went out of prison in the mid-90s after Pell Grants were taken away
right.
From incarcerated
so that
men.
So that people incarcerated could pay for their college education.
Correct. Well, and so that institutions could come in and get that Pell Grant money and provide an institutional framework for college post-secondary ed.
Well, I mean, talk about that for a minute. I mean, one of the things that really struck me here, and I want to talk about some of the men that you met in this idea of being a separate America, because I really want to get to those 2 points. But one of the things, I mean, when I taught in the prisons, which was back in the 70s, Pell Grants did exist. And men who really wanted to do something with their lives really took advantage of that and ended up, if they went to minimum security, being allowed to have a day pass to go to a junior college after the first year and take classes, whether the college students come back to the joint at night and then actually go to regular college when they left. And a lot of people turned lives around. I mean, you don't realize what a dead end it is. I don't think people really understand how much of a dead end it is for these men in that place.
It's a dead end. It absolutely is. Now, I mean, there are people who don't want it to be that way. But in America today, in Maryland today, in Baltimore today, prison is a way to perpetuate a kind of pariah class in American society because it is such a dead end. There will be success stories. There will always be success stories.
Always.
You know, same thing with urban public education. Some wonderful student will go to Harvard and it will be used to justify everything that's done in urban public education. The vast majority of human beings that get processed through prison system will live lives of quiet desperation and sometimes not quiet desperation thereafter.
This story may resonate with some of you out there listening at 410-319-8888. Some of you maybe have worked in prison. Some of you maybe have done time in prison. Some people just have a thought about what education means in our prison system. We'd love to hear your thoughts at 410-319-8888 or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. We're talking with Michael Corbin, who teaches in a prison, MTC, a prison in Baltimore City, and he's author of the article Learning the Hard Way in this month's issue of Urbanite magazine, 410-319-8888. In the article, you talk about this being a separate, I don't think I'm using the word parallel. I don't think you use the word parallel.
I did. A separate and parallel world, yeah.
For America.
A separate and parallel America.
Yeah. Talk about that concept from your perspective.
Well, and this would connect with, I think, the public education experience and why, I mean, I teach many of the same kids and literally and institutionally speaking, like a lot of my students in public school lived in a separate world. They went to Baltimore City Public Schools, which are kind of an apartheid school system. It's a majority black system, not just majority black, but almost completely black school system, one of the most segregated in the country. But then they also went back to hyper-segregated communities by race and class. And those students that I taught in public school are connected to many of the men that I teach in prison who are also part of this separate America. It's not just the sort of traditional notion of the ghetto that's separate from America, but there's a kind of parallel world that has gone on here. It's not just no longer they are seen as the underclass that will be brought into the mainstream over time, particularly, you know, in these economic times. But they exist kind of in a separate world, a parallel world to ours that I don't think many people even recognize. We think of it as, you know, sort of just the criminal element or just the drug trade. But it's much more than that. It's whole lives, whole communities, whole cultures.
You talk in the article about it was really interesting, a lot of stuff in this article. It's just a lot of pieces in here that could be developed into much larger pieces. When you talk about the men that you went to speak to across the yard, and you talked about the older heads in the joint who – and the organizations that people have formed inside the prison, and how even looking at these very bright, organized, tough black men, on the outside would be a huge threat to be seen. Talk about what that process is, what you talked about there. And your thoughts on maybe some things you didn't share with us in this article.
Yeah, I think inside prison life, inside the prison, the fact that there are no large-scale programmatic responses for rehabilitation. In fact, there's both an implicit and an explicit belief that rehabilitation is impossible.
Mm-hmm.
That prison is really about just simply about punishment and a kind of vengeful punishment. You know, you're going into this hole in the ground. You're going into this wastebasket. Well, the reality is human beings are going to like create their own meaning and social organization in that environment. And the meaning and social organization that these men create are things that probably would scare and frighten middle-class Americans. Sometimes, we think the sort of shorthand we use is gang life, like they're gangs. But and when we think of gangs, we just think of this sort of criminal activity, this criminal enterprise. But really, it's so much more sophisticated than that. Like as a teacher, if I get a black guerrilla family member who's 18 years old come into my classroom, I have to approach him as someone who's all of his reading material, all of his understanding of ethical context in the world is developed in this gang structure, this family structure. They can be very regressive organizations, but they can also provide the real sustenance and meaning to men, and it's the only thing that they got going in prison. I think we don't. If we have to take gangs seriously as cultures unto themselves that have developed partly in prison, but partly in this separate America, and if we just continue to attack them as merely criminal enterprises, we miss their substance, I think.
You can join us here at 410-319-8888. I apologize to those listeners who just called in and hung up. We'll take your calls as soon as you call back at 410-319-8888. Michael Corbin teaches in our state prison system at MTC here in Baltimore. He's author of the article Learning the Hard Way in this month's issue of Urbanite magazine. One of the things that, there's this question you raise about morality in your article, and there's not much of a differentiation between the street and the prison in a lot of ways. One's an extension of the other.
I do think that, and I think you see that partly through those social organizations that move in and out of the prison. But also, I guess one of the things that I wanted to try to convey in there is that a lot of the young men don't see a qualitative difference that, like, their interaction with civic institutions before prison might have been the police and a dysfunctional public school, maybe some kind of social service system, and their experience of civic life in prison is the police, some limited social service system, and a limited educational system. So it's qualitatively the same experience for them. Psychologically the same experience. So I think like we wonder, like, well, if you get out of prison, we'll join mainstream society or go back to being a good citizen. Well, but if it's kind of a transparency, if there's kind of a permeable membrane between those two worlds, you don't necessarily think that way.
So, I was really taken by some of the people that you described in the prison. Some of the men you talked about. It seems you're very taken with these guys. You have a real relationship with them.
Don't all teachers have relationships with their students?
Yeah, they do. Absolutely, they do. But what I mean is these are the reason I say that is because you even mentioned yourself in the article. These are men who in some senses would frighten many people who would want to come in and teach and work, But there's a respect you have for them and as human beings that is that's pretty profound, I think.
Yes, I do believe that's a prerequisite for teaching. That's why I teach. It's why I taught in Baltimore City Public Schools and why I teach now. The other reality is that teaching in prison, you meet some of the hungriest intellectual men students you'll ever meet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I'll have guys that, you know, they can't wait to get the next book. You know, I mean, you know how difficult it was for me teaching adolescents sometimes and trying to get them to read and you know, turn off the TV or the iPod or whatever and hook them onto reading. Well, you know, I got guys that will physically accost me as I walk in across the yard in the morning and say, what's to read? You know, the engagement with very deep and profound ideas. You know, Malcolm X said there were two places in America to go to get an education, and that was the university and prison. And there are some guys that take that really seriously. You know, if you have nothing to do with your time, and there are some amazing transformation stories. You know, the one brother I do talk about in there, a Muslim student who essentially taught himself to speak Arabic. You know, this is a guy who grew up on the streets of Baltimore who reads the Quran every day in Arabic, prays in Arabic, speaks to his Muslim brothers in Arabic, and studies everything. I mean, he was just insatiable. And I think that's in some ways, in part, the prison experience. And as a teacher, my God, you know, like that's what you live for, you know.
That's what you want in a student. Let's go to the phones, get the folks in here calling in at 410-319-8888. And Michael, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Hi, Michael.
I've been listening to your show. I pretty much turned it on. And I worked in a prison system on and off about 20 years. I'm a psychologist. And what we failed to understand, and what most people failed to understand, is that these people are humans in themselves. And they should not be looking upon about what they did and why they're there, but the fact that while they're there, they can possibly and hopefully get rehabilitated. And the teacher like this gentleman, and God bless you, my friend, for what you're doing. I appreciate it and commend you what you're doing. That if we have more people like that, then more people get out of prison being better people and not just better criminals. Thank you.
Well, thanks for your words. Thanks for you working in prison too. I agree. I mean, it's up to 2.3 million Americans, one in 100 Americans incarcerated. And if we don't think that these are brothers and sisters and that rehabilitation is what we really should be after as an institution, then there's something fundamentally wrong in America today.
Let's go back to the phones of 410-319-8888. And Aaron, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Aaron.
I just want to have a question for your guest mm-hmm. about what he thinks preventative measures could be based on his experience and the feedback that he's gotten from his students while in the public classroom as well as his students in prison.
Preventative measures.
To keep the young black men out of prison.
Yeah, well, it's a broad question, and if you mean by like an individual teacher in the classroom, I think it's there's, you know, teachers in Baltimore City deserve much praise, and it's very hard work. In some ways, it was much harder work than working in prison. I don't have a lot of discipline problems in my classroom in prison, for example.
right.
But
that's right. Yep.
But it, in some ways, it's more difficult. But the question is, you know, how to engage your students, the young black males. You know, they drop out by the score. We have expulsion policies that will ultimately redound to the prison school. Individual teachers make a huge difference, though. I mean, that's how I'd answer your question. And, you know, maybe to say to you and to answer Mark's question, it is that personal relationship that you can possibly make with that young man to make a fundamental difference. You know, and we need to rethink, I think, what's going on in urban education. We can't just test our way out of an apartheid school system. We can't just test our way out of social inequality.
410-319-8888. David, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, David.
How you doing?
Well. Thank you.
Well, I just wanted to touch bases on some of the things that go on inside of the prison. I work throughout the prison also, the prison system, male and female. I run a mentoring program. I run three different mentoring programs. One is called Men Mentoring Men, My Sister's Keeper, and Behind the Walls. I work with them while they're inside the prison, and I try to make it so when they come out, it's a smooth transition by GED, employment, and support systems, family strengthening. These guys can be rehabilitated, and women. But we have to make sure once we start to engage them that we have to stay consistent.
I think you're right.
I would completely agree. And I should, you know, there are a lot of people doing a lot of good work. I think it's not systematic. I think it's mostly people who take it upon themselves, nonprofit organizations, churches, Islamic organizations, mosques that do this work, that are undetected, that below the radar, that go on all the time. I mean, and one thing that I use as the kind of narrative through the classroom is that I'm teaching to them so that they'll go back out, you know, teach their sons or engage with the other young men. But just on the last point, I mean, what's been clear to me is that the sheer volume of need completely swamps the scattershot, rehabilitative, transitional mechanisms, programs, individuals out there.
Michael Corbin, it's been great to have you on the air. Thank you so much for writing the article in The Urbanite this month, Learning the Hard Way, and joining us this half an hour. We look forward to having you back for more intense discussions with others about our prisons and how to make them right.
Thanks very much.
Good to have you. Good to have you back. Thank you so much. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite, Baltimore's free monthly magazine of ideas. This month, Urbanite goes back to school with a learning issue, featuring reports on the future of high-stakes testing, new approaches to the dropout crisis, and the challenges of teaching behind bars. Urbanite is available at over 750 locations. And we'll remind you to be sure to get your tickets to WEAA's first homecoming cruise. Join us for a night of fun and games at WEAA's Cotton Club Casino Fun Night Cruise aboard the Spirit of Baltimore, Thursday, October the 8th, from 7 to 10 p.m., sailing from the historic Inner Harbor. Your ticket price includes dinner and a special performance from soulful jazz artist Gene Karn. A portion of your ticket will benefit WEAA, so don't miss the boat. Tickets are available by calling 410-727-3113 or 1-800-695-BOAT. That's 1-800-695-2628 or online at weaa.org. When we return, we'll be talking with James McBride, the author of Song Gets Sung, The Color of Water, and The Miracle of Santa Ana. Stay with us. We'll be right back.